Guests tuned to yesterday broadcasting programs from radio's golden years. I'm your host, Mark Levenier. Welcome to This Hour of Broadway, or selections thereof. Later on, we'll hear a story later adapted on The Great White Way, but right now, the classic Victoria Regina on the Hallmark Hall of Fame. This first opened at the Broadhurst Theater in New York City in 1935 with Helen Hayes as part of the opening night cast and ran for 203 performances. William Frug produced, directed, and adapted this next episode from May 23, 1954 on CBS.
Remember a Hallmark card when you care enough to send the very best. Tonight from Hollywood, the makers of Hallmark cards bring you a true story from the life of Queen Victoria, starring Helen Hayes on the Hallmark Hall of Fame. And here is our distinguished host, Mr. Lionel Barrymore.
And welcome to the Hallmark Hall of Fame. Tonight, a true story from the life of England's Queen Victoria. The reign of Victoria began in 1837 and ended in 1901. For 64 years, this remarkable woman ruled. During that time, her kingdom became an empire, and she gave her name to an era. We're indeed proud to welcome as our star, Miss Helen Hayes, will recreate the role she made famous on Broadway in Victoria Regina. The role of a queen means more than glory, more than ceremonies and affairs of state. Queen Victoria of Great Britain was a much beloved monarch, yet seven attempts were made on her life. Our story tonight concerns one of them. The date is May the 30th, 1842. Place, London. The office of the Chief Inspector of Police.
Gentlemen. Yesterday afternoon, while taking her daily ride in the park, an assassin made an attempt on the life of Her Royal Highness. Fortunately, his pistol misfired. Unfortunately, he escaped, unnoticed by the crowd. Now, yes?
Mr. Vanson here to see you, Inspector.
Oh? Oh. If you will forgive me, gentlemen. Would you ask Mr. Anson to come in, Sergeant?
Yes, sir.
Mr. Anson, so good of you to come.
Of course, sir. If I can be of any service.
Please sit down.
Thank you, sir.
I'm going to speak frankly, Mr. Anson. As private secretary to Prince Albert, I believe it is in the best interest for you to be made aware of the importance of the situation.
I appreciate your confidence, sir.
The fact is, the police do not know who fired on Her Majesty in the park yesterday afternoon. Not even the public was aware of the incident.
I see.
For Queen Victoria to appear in public at this time would be extremely dangerous. It's imperative that the prince be made aware of the facts without his assistance.
Yesterday afternoon I was present, Inspector, when Her Majesty returned from her ride. And if I may say so, I'm afraid the Queen did not give the matter the serious attention it merited.
I was afraid that might be the case. Well, our only hope is Prince Albert.
Inspector, the influence the Prince Consort holds over Her Majesty is well known. But it is equally known that when the Queen makes up her mind, there is very little that can change it.
Please explain, Mr. Anson.
Last evening, I heard Her Majesty suggest to the Prince that perhaps a carriage ride today might draw out the assassin.
Oh, good heavens.
I'm afraid the Prince agreed with her.
Very well, Mr. Anson. We realize that our power to act in this matter is extremely limited. But will you please convey this message to the Prince? Tell him Her Majesty's police very urgently plead that the Queen shall not drive out today.
Yes, sir. I shall deliver the message.
Mr. Anson, you are late.
I'm sorry, Prince Albert. I was just coming when the Chief Inspector of Police sent word that he wished to see me.
Has he news?
None, sir. They can't trace the man, so he very urgently begs that Her Majesty shall not drive out today.
It is a risk, Mr. Anson, but it will be a greater risk if we leave the man to choose his own time later when the police will not be so ready for him as they are today.
He will choose his own time in any case, sir.
Yes, but now it will be the earliest possible. Yesterday, because his pistol missed fire, he thought no one saw him. Her Majesty was looking the other way.
That was very fortunate, sir. Had Her Majesty shown any alarm, it would have told him.
Her Majesty would have shown no alarm. You may be quite sure of that. Nor is Her Majesty alarmed now. It was her own decision, not mine, that we should go out today. When I told her that the man was sure to make another attempt, she said that he had better make it at once then and get it over.
That was very courageous of Her Majesty, sir.
And so, Mr. Anson, Her Majesty drives out today at her usual time. Will you go and tell the inspector that at once? Out there are the people waiting to see Her Majesty start. Tell him that we shall be punctual.
I will, Your Highness. I hope...
We all hope, Mr. Anson. Here is Her Majesty.
Good day, Your Majesty.
You are very punctual, my dear.
Yes, we mustn't be late today.
You look very well, very charming. That bonnet suits you.
Kiss me, Albert.
You make a very good queen, my dear.
With you to help me.
Even by yourself, I think you would not do so badly.
That will never happen, Albert. I couldn't live without you.
You can do very unexpected things, my dear. You never expected that you would have to do anything like this, but you are doing it.
Doing it with you, dearest. I like doing it.
So do I. It makes our life mean so much more to us. Look, out the window. Look at all those friendly people waiting for you to smile on them. Rather amusing, is it not, that none of them knows in the least what we know?
Albert, this must be rather like going into battle.
Just a little, my dear. But we have to do it in a cold-blooded way, without any excitement. That makes it rather more difficult, perhaps.
Oh, but it excites me very much, Albert. For this is to be really a queen. And with you beside me, I feel quite safe that I can behave like one.
Yes. So do I, Vipschen. So do I.
May it please Your Majesty's ladies are in attendance.
Oh, yes. Tell them to come in. Albert, I didn't say anything to them before. I thought it was better not. But they mustn't come with us today, you know. It wouldn't be safe.
You are quite right, my dear. It would be dangerous for them. We must go alone.
Lady Muriel, Lady Grace, I do not require either of you this afternoon. I and the Prince are going out alone.
And Your Majesty will not require us again later?
No, not this afternoon. You can wait till we have gone, and then I shall not require your further attendance till this evening. And now, Albert, I am quite ready to start. I wonder if it is going to rain.
I think not. Just now it looked quite promising.
Oh, Albert, I do so love the drives in fair weather.
Well, I do think that's too bad. Here we've been kept waiting all for nothing. And if I'd known, I could have got off for the whole afternoon. I do call that inconsiderate of her.
It's what she is, my dear. It's being a queen. You are so important yourself, you can't think much about other people.
Oh, there, I've torn my glove. Dear, dear. Well, my own fault, I suppose, taking it off in a temper.
While Queen Victoria and her husband, Prince Albert, were riding through the park, an assassin stepped from behind a bush and shot at the Queen. The gun misfired and the would-be assassin disappeared, unnoticed by the crowd. Yet on the very next day, in spite of police warnings, Victoria and Albert went riding through that very same park. And as usual, the crowds lined the street to see the royal couple, unaware that in their midst a killer stood waiting.
Oh, Albert, it is such a lovely day.
You should have let me come alone.
No, Albert. It must be this way. Together.
Still, I might have drawn him out.
Look at them. My people. Lining the street to see us pass. It makes me proud to be queen of such a nation.
Are you frightened, Bridget?
No. I'm with you.
What is it, my dear?
Once I was frightened. So very frightened. Oh?
And when was that?
It was just before we were married. Let me see. Yes, it was in November. I had to face the Privy Council and tell them I was betrothed.
Was that so amusing?
Oh, my hand shook so I could hardly read the declaration. And when I think of one young girl facing those 83 old men, it seems very amusing somehow. I wonder I was able to read it at all.
I felt that same fear once.
Really, Albert? I didn't think you'd ever been afraid of anything.
Possibly more often than I care to admit. To think, Bridget, perhaps somewhere among those people hides a man with a gun. Perhaps when we turn the next corner, suddenly he will appear and fire upon us. And yet, I am not afraid for myself. But there is another fear.
When you were afraid the other time, you were about to tell me, Albert. When was it?
If I tell you, you may never forgive me.
Go on, Albert. I must hear it.
Well, it was the morning of our wedding. I remember it distinctly. The awe of it. That I, a foreigner, a German, should be marrying the Queen of England. And all the time I had hoped for it. Still, when it was about to happen, I could not believe it.
But you didn't seem afraid at the ceremony. Oh, how handsome you were. I remember saying over and over to myself, oh, my beautiful Albert. My beautiful Albert.
You were the one who was beautiful, dearest. And yet that very morning I sat down and wrote a letter to my grandmother. Dearest grandmother, I said, in less than 3 hours, I shall stand before the altar with my dear bride. In these solemn moments, I must once more ask your blessing, which I am well assured I shall receive.
But that doesn't sound like a man who was afraid.
No, but let me finish. Dearest grandmother, I said to her, I must once more ask your blessing for my future joy. God help me.
And to think that this is the man to whom I awarded the Order of the Garter, the greatest honor of chivalry a queen can give.
It took no bravery to marry you, Bridget. A coward could have done it.
And such a day it was. The rain, the dismal clouds. And yet all of our wonderful people crowded about Buckingham Palace. And the band playing the wedding march that Mr. Mendelssohn had written for us. It will always be my favorite piece.
And then I drove with my father and my brother to St. James Palace, and I had to wait. Uh-huh. I don't think I have ever waited longer for anything to happen, unless it is today.
Listen, Albert. Just as they did at our wedding. Albert, don't you remember? Albert, what is wrong?
The park road curves north, just ahead.
So?
It is the place where yesterday...
I was not looking when it happened yesterday. I do not remember the place.
Constitution Hill is full of them. What can have happened?
Been an accident?
No, not an accident. They're cheering, waving, shouting. And here come mounted police, such a lot of them.
The Queen, something exciting must have happened.
Well, they must have done something very popular anyhow. Look, the crowd's quite crazy. been shot at. She's been shot at.
Where?
When?
Just now, on Constitution Hill.
Was she hurt?
Who did it?
No, no, not her. A man, a madman, they think.
Caught, was he caught?
Yes, they were expecting it. She tried to do it before yesterday.
Then that was why.
Yes.
Oh, my dear, she knew. Went, knowing that she was going to be shot at. That's why she didn't take us. Oh, I'm so ashamed of myself. Oh, Your Majesty.
Lady Muriel, why are you still here? Didn't I tell you I should not want you again until this evening? Now go at once.
Oh, Your Majesty, before I go, may I kiss Your Majesty's hand?
Why, certainly, if you wish to. Now, don't cry. Don't be silly. It's all over.
I'm so sorry, ma'am. So sorry. So ashamed of myself.
Ashamed? Why?
When Your Majesty said we were not to come out with you this afternoon, I was foolishly cross. I didn't understand.
Of course not. It was not necessary that you should. But now you do, so that will help you to know better another time.
Another time?
Go, please, Lady Muriel. I don't want you any more now.
Yes, Your Majesty.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Why, yes, Albert. There may come another time. Why not?
Oh, my dear, my dear. And you can say that now? As if you do not mind if there should come again? Is that really true?
Yes, Albert. It was wonderful. For with you, I felt so safe. Didn't you?
No, Vatchin. I was afraid.
Afraid?
I was afraid that if he missed one of us, it might be me that he missed. Oh, no, 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 no. Do not talk of another time. I could not bear it another time.
Oh, Albert, if I thought for a moment that it might be you, I couldn't have gone. But that could happen, I didn't think.
What a very good thing it was, then, my dear, that you did not think. Queens must not think too much about others. Only about themselves.
Dearest, have I pleased you?
Very much. You have more than pleased me. You have behaved like a queen.
Then now I must go and take off my things. Oh, dear, what a lot of letters I shall have to write now. To Uncle Leopold and to everybody.
Yes, that was Queen Victoria. Warm, yet strong. A model of courage for a people. And thus, with Albert at her side, there began the Victorian era. But on December the 14th, 1861, the prince died of typhoid fever, and for Victoria there came a period of mourning and despair. But if Victoria had always been a devoted wife, she was also a queen devoted to her people. And so she conquered despair and regained her strength and led Great Britain in its days of greatest glory. And the 20th day of June, 1897, was a day of celebration, a day of rejoicing throughout the world, the day marking the 60th year of Victoria's rule, the Diamond Jubilee. And in the palace that morning...
Sir Arthur... Will you please to give orders for the window to be ready? I believe Her Majesty is coming now.
Mama, dear, how are you? Very tired, my dear. But oh, so happy. To think now that it is all over. I am so glad that I had the strength for it.
You were quite wonderful, Mama.
Oh, thank you, dear, thank you. So the doctor tells me he had just felt my pulse and taken my temperature, and he says that he could not have believed it possible. Oh, I am so thankful.
So is everybody. Mm. And now, Mama, I think you'd better go and rest.
Oh, no, not yet, not yet. That cheering that I hear means that my dear people are expecting to see me again, and I must try not to disappoint them.
It would be nice if you could, Mama. Do you think you can?
Oh, yes, oh, yes. But I can't get up, you know. I can't get up. I shall have to go as I am. Have the windows opened? Yes, but Over the balustrade, they will not be able to see me. I must be ready. Tell them to bring in the sliding gate.
It is already there in position, Mama.
Really? How thoughtful. Now, Bertie, will you and some of the others go out on the balcony and let them know that I am coming? Not too many, just a few. Someone will wheel my chair.
Yes.
It is very gratifying, very, to find, after all these years, that they do appreciate all that I have tried to do for them, for their good, and for this dear country of ours. We have been so near together today, they and I. Oh, my dear people of England and Scotland and Ireland and the dear colonies and India. From all over the world, I've had messages, you know. It's most extraordinary, such loyalty, such devotion. Very gratifying. Well, I must go now and rest, or I shall not be able to take my place at dinner. That would never do. I'm so happy. Oh, Bertie, as we were coming back, it was just at Hyde Park corner. There was a great crowd there, you know, and a lot of rough-looking men. Of course, it never should have happened, but it didn't matter, really. Broke right through the lines of the police and the troops guarding the route. And they ran alongside the carriage, shouting and cheering me. And I heard one of them say, "Go it, old girl, you've done it well." Of course, very unsuitable, the words, but very gratifying. And oh, I hope it's true. I hope it's true. Oh, they're still cheering. Oh, Albert. Albert. If only you could have been here.
Here again is Lionel Barrymore.
Helen, perhaps more than any historian will ever be able to do, you have made Queen Victoria come alive for the people of this generation. By your portrayals on the stage and the screen, you've shown us how a great queen and a fine woman felt and lived and acted. It was a real pleasure for us to have you take the role of Queen Victoria on the Hallmark Hall of Fame tonight.
I was very happy to do so, Lionel. It's always been one of my favorite roles, you know. And do you know something? If what I've read about the large number of listeners you have on the Hallmark Hall of Fame is correct, then more people were able to hear Queen Victoria's story tonight than in all of the performances that I gave on the stage. So for that, I'm most grateful to you and the makers of Hallmark cards for making it possible.
Thank you, Helen. Thank you. We all admire the Queen, but we love Helen Hayes. So any time you can be with us is a gala time for the Hallmark Hall of Fame.
Thank you, Lionel. And what story are you doing next week?
Next week, we're going to tell the moving story of the four chaplains who went down at sea together during World War II. Aboard the troop ship Dorchester.
Oh, it's a truly inspirational story, Lionel, and one I'm sure everyone should hear. I know that I, for one, will be listening. Good night, Lionel.
Thank you, Helen Hayes, for being with us.
And until next week, this is Lionel Barrymore saying good night.
The Hallmark Hall of Fame on Tuned to Yesterday, a CBS episode from May 23, 1954. You're listening to an hour of Broadway on Tuned to Yesterday with your host, Mark Levionier. And if you're a classic movie fan, I'm sure you've heard of the film Destry Rides Again, which originally starred James Stewart and Marlena Dietrich in 1939. And in 1959, it was brought to the Broadway stage as a musical, and a successful one at that, running for nearly 500 performances. This next adaptation from the Gulf Screen Guild Theater relies more heavily on the movie, with an all-star replacement cast for the story. It's Destry Rides Again.
Paulette Goddard, Henry Fonda, Walter Brennan, Lloyd Nolan.
The Gulf Screen Guild Theater. Your host, the director of the star's own theater, Roger Pryor.
Good evening, everyone. Your neighborhood good Gulf dealer and the Gulf Oil Companies welcome you to the Gulf Screen Guild Theater. Tonight, we have a four-star story with a four-star cast. The stars, Paulette Goddard, Henry Fonda, Lloyd Nolan, and Walter Brennan. And the story, Destry Rides Again. A thrilling drama of the Old West with a brilliant score played by Oscar Bradley's Gulf Orchestra with Frank Tuhas conducting. A burst of applause greets our stars as they enter the Gulf Theater stage. They step to the microphones and we present Destry Rides Again, adapted by Paul Franklin and Charles Tazewell. Henry Fonda plays Deputy Sheriff Tom Destry. Paulette Goddard is Frenchie. Lloyd Nolan is heard as the crooked gambler, Kent. And Walter Brennan is Wash Dimmesdale, the town drunk. Now the house lights fade, there's the opening music cue, and Destry Rides Again. The town of Bottleneck is a rough and tawdry accumulation of unpainted shacks, gambling houses, saloons, and dance halls growing out of the Montana prairie. The Last Chance Saloon is the roughest, loudest, bawdiest spot in Bottleneck, and is owned by a man named Kent and his partner, the girl called Frenchie, who runs the roulette wheel.
All right, gentlemen, place your bets. The wheel's running hot tonight. Pick your lucky number and make your prayers to Lady Luck.
Wash, a tremulous old barfly, stands drunkenly at Frenchie's elbow, mumbling half to her and half to himself about his favorite subject.
Yes, sir. Old Tom Destry was the bravest shootingest sheriff that ever lived. I'm telling you, Frenchie.
Tell me some other time, Wash. Here we go, boys. Round and round it goes, and where it stops, nobody knows.
Old Tom Destry wasn't scared of nothing and of nobody. And when Destry and me started shooting, why, the law spread all over the land like a flood.
Number 13 on the black. Too bad, boys, but stay with it. Somebody's got to win sometime, you know.
Just keep your money in your belts, men. Haven't got a chance of winning on that wheel.
Who says so? Well, if it isn't Sheriff Keogh with his tin star polished up like a headlight.
Closing you up, Frenchie.
You don't tell me.
And every other game in the place. Your roulette wheel's crooked. Kent's cards are marked. So close up and stay closed.
Kent's going to be kind of hurt about this, Sheriff. Shall I break the news to him, or are you brave enough to do it?
Where is he?
Back there in the office.
Thanks.
Hey, what's up, Frenchie?
The sheriff's come to close us up, Mayor.
I told Kent he was a troublemaker when he appointed him.
He's gone in to talk to Kent. I'll hand it to Keogh. He's got plenty of...
Two shots, Frenchie, in Kent's office.
Yeah, I heard him. Kent's got an awful quick temper. I'm afraid something just happened in there that's going to cause a lot of trouble. Come on, Clara. Stop shaking and powder my back.
Yeah,
yes?
It's Kent.
All right, come in.
Get out of here, Clara.
Yes, sir. That's just what I'll say.
Well, what about Sheriff Keeler?
Well, I told everybody he went out the back way. He had a sudden call to go out of town.
Won't they ask questions when he never comes back?
They'll have to find his body before they can prove anything.
I didn't bargain for murder when I teamed up with you, Candy.
Now, don't get soft-hearted on me, Frenchie.
All right, I still say it was a mistake to kill Sheriff Keel.
The mistake was appointing him sheriff in the first place.
Well, who's the lucky man you've selected for your next victim?
I don't know. Could be Jip, Steve, any one of our boys.
Wouldn't it look pretty crude if you put in one of your own crowd?
Yeah, maybe you're right.
Say, I know just the man. He's right outside hanging on the bar. Elect him sheriff, give him a bottle a day, and the town's yours.
Who are you talking about?
Our local drunken windbag, the Honorable Wash.
Wash Dimsdale? Yeah. Why, of course, it's a natural. Oh, Frenchie, you're wonderful. Come on, we'll go out front and break the news to the mayor. Have him tell Wash he's our new sheriff.
Sheriff Joe Keogh, having been suddenly called away, we need a new sheriff. Therefore, I here and now appoint his successor, that paragon of courage, that credit to Bottleneck, Mr. Wash Dimsdale.
Who's talking about me?
That's you. It's you, Wash. The mayor, why, she just appointed you sheriff of Bottleneck.
Sheriff? Sheriff, did you say? What kind of a loony joke is he pulling from?
No joke, Wash. Hand me the badge, Kent. I want to pin it on our new sheriff personal there.
Sheriff, let me be the first to congratulate you. Hey, bartender, drinks in the house.
Come on, Wash. We'll celebrate with champagne.
Sheriff, just like old Tom Distry.
Say, Wash, didn't you hear me? I said, come on and have a drink.
Yeah, I heard you, Frenchie. But Sheriff Wash Dimsdale ain't drinking.
What? You not drinking?
A man has to choose betwixt a bottle and a badge, and I'm choosing the badge, Kent.
Better change your mind.
No, Frenchie, I'm making it up here and now. This town needs respect for law and order.
And you're going to give it to us, huh?
When I was Destry's deputy, we handled ornery up bunches and you got here.
Sure, but Destry's been dead a long time.
Maybe so. But young Tom Destry's alive. I'm sending for him to be my deputy.
Your what?
He was handmade by his pa to be the fightin'est man in the Hull West. Yes, sir, I'm sending for him to come here by the first stage. We'll clean up this town, me and him, and you'll see. Destry ride again. I'm sending for him. I'm sending for young Tom Destry.
Destry. Ain't he the guy that cleaned up Tombstone?
Yeah, Tombstone and Points West. You know, Kent, I hate to be a pessimist, but I wonder if we haven't made another big mistake.
Back now, everybody. Come on now, give Tom Destry a chance to get out of the stagecoach.
Driver, you ever handle a team like that again? I'm going to tear you apart with my own bare hands. You hear that?
Listen to him, Tom Destry. Welcome to Bottleneck.
Sorry, partner, but my name's Carruthers.
Then where's Tom Destry?
Wash. I'm Tom Destry. Guess I changed some since you last saw me.
You, Tom? Oh. I guess I didn't expect to see Tom Destry dressed up like a dude wearing an umbrella.
Wash, I knew a man once named Stubbs. Thought he saw a potato bug on his leg. Well, Stubbs reached out and grabbed her and nearly lost his hand. He judged by looks. Darn thing was a bumblebee. And as for the umbrella, it was raining when we left Pecos.
Huh? Well, Tom, this here's Kent. Kent? Tom Destry.
Howdy.
Well, so you're Tom Destry, huh?
Yep. Sure have heard a lot about you, Mr. Kent.
Yeah? Maybe you've heard I got a hobby.
That's funny. So have I. Mine's carving napkin rings.
Is that so? Mine happens to be collecting deputy sheriff's guns.
So you better give me yours right now.
Sorry, but that's one gun your collection's going to be minus.
You mean I'll have to take it?
If you can.
Tom, look out!
Keep your hands right where they are till I frisk you. You make one move and I'll be hanged. You ain't packing a gun.
Nope, I never reckon I'd need to be healed in bottleneck.
Huh. And after all we heard, the great Tom Destry's son, a no-gun sheriff. Well, if this ain't a hot one, say, come on over to the last chance. I want you to meet Frenchie. Boy, is she gonna get a big laugh out of you. Come over, Frenchie. Tell me what you think of him.
You mean this dude is what we've been waiting for?
Yes, ma'am. I'm Tom Destry. Coming visiting, I wore my good clothes.
He's cute, ain't he, Frenchie? And you know what? He don't carry a gun.
And you're the guy who cleaned up Tombstone. What did you use, a cake of soap?
Well, no, ma'am, but I've seen the time a cake of soap could have come in mighty handy. Man I knew once had a reputation of being plenty tough. One night, he called on a lady who worked in a Tombstone saloon. He kind of fancied her, and he kissed her on the cheek to prove it. If she'd have used soap and water more often, he'd still be here. You see, the poor man died next morning in a painter's college.
Why, you insulting...
Frenchie,
let
down.
Me alone, I'll tear his eyes out!
Hey, Lion, quit!
Hey, Frenchie! I'll kill him. He can't talk to me that way.
Shucks, Tom. She tripped in that chair and knocked herself clean out.
I'm sure sorry for what happened, but we can't let a lady stay lying on a saloon floor.
Tom, put down that water bucket. Tom, go.
Someone's got to bring the lady, too.
Who did that? Who threw that water on me?
I'm lying, ma'am. I did it with a little bucket.
Get out of my way and let me at him. I'm going to tear him apart.
Look out, Tom. She got a hold of that lamp.
Now, ma'am, you should never throw a lamp underhand.
Dodge this one, then.
Whoa, now, if you gotta throw glasses, make sure mine's got beer.
I'll beer you. I'll break your neck.
Careful, ma'am.
I'll show you.
Frenchie, look out that table.
Great gilded glory, Tom.
What happened?
Why, she done knocked herself out again.
On the second act of Destry Rides Again, starring Henry Fonda as Tom Destry, Paulette Goddard as Frenchie, Lloyd Nolan as Kent, and Walter Brennan as Wash. Much to Wash's disappointment, his new deputy is still a no-gun lawman. The mystery of Sheriff Keogh's strange disappearance is still unsolved, although Wash is certain he was murdered. Destry is asked to carry on the investigation in his own way, and as the scene opens, he's calling at Frenchie's house in the hope of getting some information.
Miss French, it's safe for you to come right along in, Mr. Destry.
Thanks.
Yeah, he is, Miss French.
Get out of the way, Clara.
Yes, ma'am.
Whoa, now hold it, ma'am.
Come out from behind that settee, you coward.
Now, please don't start throwing things again. I came over here special just to apologize.
Apologize for what?
Well, if you put that lamp down, I think we could talk more comfortable.
Well, all right, start talking.
Well, I aim to apologize to you for not knowing who was the real boss of Bottleneck.
So you're finally starting to get some sense, huh?
Well, you might call it that. Now, I could have stomped in here shooting off my face about rumors I've heard.
Such as?
Well, some folks say you run a crooked wheel and you take part in crooked poker games.
Destry, you think you can come in here and hint around with me, don't you? Listen, I've seen tinhorns like you plenty of them.
Well, I've seen people like you too, Frenchie. Abilene, Dodge, Tombstone, they all thought the easy picking would last forever.
You better mind your own business or you'll be heading for trouble.
Trouble is my business.
Well, mine's doing as I please, and in this town, that's just what I do.
So I notice.
And I've got plenty of people back of me to take care of anybody that gets in my way.
Like they took care of Sheriff Keogh?
Yes, just like that.
That's what I thought.
You didn't do much thinking.
Is that what's called a hint in Bottleneck?
Yeah. And the second hint is a bullet.
I like that about you, Frenchie. You come to the point. Oh, that's not the only thing I like about you. I bet you got a pretty face under all that paint.
You take that back, or I'll...
Wipe the paint off sometime, Frenchie, and take a good look at what's underneath it. and figure how you can live up to it. You see, I got an idea I could like you a lot.
Get out! Get out of here!
That's a mighty pretty teacup. That's the nicest thing you ever threw at me.
Get out!
I guess you're learning to like me, too.
Get off! Get off! Get off!
Great gilded glory, Tom, chasing after Frenchie and getting this town cleaned up. Why don't you strap on them guns and put Kent and his gang in Boot Hill Cemetery?
Because that's not my way, Wash. I had a friend once, an opera singer. Went into the cement business. One day he fell into the mixer, and now he's in the cornerstone of the post office in St. Louis, Missouri. He should have stuck to his own way of doing things.
Well, I still say that Kent and his whole crowd ought to be planted 6 feet under.
And more than likely, a dozen more would spring up in their place. No, Sir Walsh, we got to put them behind bars as an example to the rest.
Yeah, but how?
Well, do you think Sheriff Keogh left town?
Oh, of course not. No matter what Kent says, I know. He was ventilated with a .44.
Suppose we was to find, what do them lawyers call it, the corpus delicti, the body of the deceased?
We ain't got a chance of doing that.
I think we have, Walsh. Come on, let's go over to the last chance and have a little powwow with the only witness to that shooting, Mr. Kent himself. It sure is right neighborly of you to let me join in your checker game, Mr. Kent. You know, most folks around here ain't so friendly.
Well, see, we just don't like sheriffs. I'll jump your man here.
Uh-huh. Well, they tell me Sheriff Keogh wasn't very popular. Every time I mention his name, people look scared. Guess I'll have to take one of your men now.
Well, look who's visiting us. Hello, Destry.
Good evening, Miss Frenchie.
Maybe checkers is your game, and checkers you can take a man without using a gun.
Tom was just asking about Keogh, Frenchie.
Destry, you seem to make a habit of wasting your time.
I'm telling you now, Destry, that Keogh left town.
I know. Only I got to thinking maybe he left something behind. Something like a body.
Yeah? Well, you can't prove a crime without finding a body.
That's right, Kent, but supposing we knew where there was one in pretty good condition.
Well, that's a fine, lively conversation in front of a lady. Come on, Sheriff. Let's see how you are dancing.
Ma'am, I'm sure unhandy with my feet.
Well, you'll have to prove that, mister, because I've always wanted to lay my head on a sheriff's badge.
Well, I might as well go whole hog or nothing.
If you'll excuse us, Ken.
Oh, sure. Go right ahead. Hey, Mayor. Come here.
Yeah, Ken?
Destry's shooting off his mouth. He's hinting that he's found Keogh's body.
Oh, he's bluffing. If anybody's been out to Panamint Canyon, we'd know about it.
Yeah, but we gotta find out. I tell you what. Send Jip out there to make sure while Frenchie's dancing with Destry to keep him here.
Well, Destry, how did you like it?
It's pretty good. Especially that part where they call your left arm up and your right around her waist, dance with a pretty girl face to face.
Yeah, that's twice you've said I was pretty.
Well, you are.
Destry, you know, there's something about you that... Look, will you please get out of this town before they kill you?
Would it make you feel bad if they did?
What difference does that make?
A lot.
All right. Then will you go for my sake?
Tom! It worked! It worked, just like you said.
We'll talk it over outside.
Yeah, but I found it, Tom, out Panamint Canyon.
Shut up, Wash, can't you see
it? Oh, Sheriff, you've been out to Panamint Canyon, huh? Tell me, what did you find?
You ought to know, Kent. He followed Jip. We followed Jip when you sent him out of here, and he led us right to Keogh's body. Yeah, and I got Jip locked up in a jug on a charge of murder.
Well, Wash, if there isn't something being poured into your mouth, something else is being spilled out of it.
Let him talk, Destry. Kent doesn't seem to be enjoying
it. Shut up, Frenchie. Well, they haven't got a case against Jip.
You're darn tootin' we have, and what's more, we got a circuit judge coming in on the morning stage to try him. And maybe you, too, if we can get Jip to talk.
Oh, yeah? But thanks for the information, Wash. Only I wouldn't count too much on Jip talking. A lot of things can happen before morning.
Miss Frenchie's expecting me.
Thanks, Clara. Oh, I got word you had to talk to me tonight, Frenchie.
Yes, I had to.
I'm leaving town and I wanted to see you before I left.
Why, it's kind of sudden, ain't it?
No, I should have left here long ago. No, I'd never to have tied up with Kent.
Kind of glad to hear you say that. I reckon folks are going to miss you here.
What about you?
Yeah, me too. Where do you aim to go?
Back where I came from. New Orleans. Have you ever been there?
No.
Wonderful air this time of year. Tom, will you come with me? How about it? You said you liked me, didn't you? Please, you've got to come.
Well, I sure would like to, but I got a job here to finish.
All you've got here is a piece of ground 6 feet deep. Tom, what can I say to you? I can't bear to see you killed like Keo.
What makes you think I will be?
Because I know Kent. The stage leaves tonight. Promise me you'll be on.
Why are you so afraid for me?
Because I love you, that's why. I've loved you since the first moment you walked into town. Well, go on, laugh, why don't you?
Because I don't see nothing to laugh about.
You don't think I'm so bad?
Bad? Didn't I tell you once I had an idea I could like you a lot?
Tom.
Shots. Down toward the jail.
What is it?
So it's all a trick.
Tom, no.
You got me here and fed me a lot of fancy talk while Kent raided the jail. I'll remember this, Frank.
Tom, don't go out there, please. Tom. Oh, you poor fool.
Carry him in here, Doctor. That's it. There. How is it now, Wash?
They shot me in the back, Tom.
Yeah, I know. You got a rest, Wash?
No. My resting time's coming. Don't pull that long face, Tom. It was Moon's fault.
Please, Wash.
No, I'm to blame. Give it all away to Kent when I come into the saloon. Tom, I'm just plumb no good.
That ain't so, Wash. You and my dad, you're two peas in a pod. Brave and honest and tough. And like him, you got shot in the back. But when I leave here, I'm strapping on his own two guns and squaring a lot of accounts.
Yeah, Destry's guns. Old Tom, I'll be sitting on a cloud of steadying your shooting arm. Steadying your shooting arm when Destry rides again. When Destry rides again.
Kent, do you hear me? This is Destry, Kent. I'm coming for you.
Don't come in, Tom. He'll kill you.
This is Destry, Kent, and I'm coming in.
Tom.
I've been waiting for you, Destry.
That gun you're packing loaded?
With slugs that have got your name written all over them. Your gal friend came down to plead for your life. Now she can stay and watch you die.
Tom, you don't stand a chance. Why didn't you listen to me?
I've listened to a lot of things today, Frenchie. You and Wash while he was dying with a bullet in his back. Now I'm tired of listening. Kent, you're finished.
Huh? Look who's talking.
It's Tom Destry talking, Kent. And this time I'm packing my guns. Now, just to give you a break, suppose we let Frenchie here start counting. And when she gets to three, I'll figure your hand is filled.
All right, Frenchie. And make it fast.
I won't. I'm not going to stand
here. Go on, Frenchie.
Yeah, start counting.
One. Two.
For God's sake, get it over with.
Look out,
Frenchie,
Tom!
Don't, Frenchie.
You little fool, get out of
here. Yours, Kent.
Nice shoot. Nice shooting, Destry. You win. I reckon they top card in any game is a dame in love.
Frenchie, why did you run in front of me?
I tried to be the girl.
I know, but you ain't got no call to be stopping a bullet meant for me.
Not bad. My shoulder.
I gotta get you to a doctor.
It doesn't hurt half as much as what you said when you left me tonight.
Oh, I didn't mean it. I didn't mean it at all.
Then you
still have the idea that maybe you could like me?
I ain't never lost the idea. I ain't never gonna lose it. Hey. Hey, what are you crying for?
Because I'm happy. And because maybe the tears will wash away any pain that's left. I wouldn't want you to get pained with colic.
Shucks. I had colic regular when I was a baby. Look, I ain't scared of it at all.
Gentlemen, you have just heard Paulette Goddard, Henry Fonda, Walter Brennan, and Lloyd Nolan direct from the stage of the Gulf Screen Guild Theater in Hollywood. The four stars you heard tonight, like the famous screen personalities we have brought you in the past, all donated their performances. In return, Gulf has contributed handsomely to the Motion Picture Relief Fund in order to help build the home that will provide for the workers in the picture industry who can no longer provide for themselves. Next week, one of the most sensational casts in the 3-year history of the Gulf Theater. Norma Shearer, Franco Tone, Mary Astor, and Hattie McDaniel in No Time for Comedy. It's the romantic comedy that came to Hollywood after a record run on Broadway and became a motion picture hit from coast to coast.
The Gulf Screen Guild Theater on Tuned to Yesterday from February 2nd, 1941 on CBS. Closing the curtain on this hour of Broadway on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark LeVanier. It's been a pleasure.